Adventures of a Bookernaut podcast. I'm your host, Sean Wright, and welcome to episode 3.
I'm chatting with author and longtime fan of erotic love stories and B-grade horror, Kylie Scott. Welcome to the podcast, Kylie.
Thank you for having me, Sean.
That's all right. Now, with the release and popularity of 50 Shades, it's possibly a little easier to say you're an author of erotic fiction than it was a couple of years ago. What do you usually tell people when they ask you what you do for a living?
I often just start out by saying I'm a romance writer. And like anyone, I guess, who's in love with what they're doing, you tend to get a bit carried away with talking about it. So if they're interested, I'll admit to the erotic part. If not, I let it go. I think you're definitely right. I think with 50 Shades, it's definitely mainstreamed. It's become a lot more publicly acceptable to be writing smart in all its beautiful forms.
The question was prompted by my, I was talking to a colleague at work yesterday. I work in a library. And she said, oh, you do podcasts. Well, who are you interviewing? And I said, oh, I'm interviewing an erotic fiction author. And there was a brief sort of half a second moment where her face just showed a little bit of shock before she went on, oh, yes, that's quite all right. But yeah, I thought that's interesting. It's still, for a certain segment of the population, I suppose it's still a bit confronting.
Yeah, it certainly can be. I don't hide what I do, but yeah, I do tend to be a little bit careful, I guess. It's a funny one, isn't it? People can have such varied reactions to sex as a topic just in general, writing it or not. So it really depends on the situation, but it doesn't bother me coming out with it. I'm not worried about it. I know some people are very secretive, sort of their best friend and their husband might know that they're doing it, but otherwise no pictures of themselves are out there. They keep their identity a very close secret. I don't feel the need for that for myself, but I can appreciate other people might be worried about reactions, especially if you were, there's such a varied range of people writing romance. There's everyone from lawyers to teachers to you name it. So if you're a grade 2 school teacher, it mightn't be the best idea to have it public knowledge, but it's not an issue for me. It doesn't bother me.
Okay. We'll go on to talking about your first book, which was released last year through Momentum Publishing. It's entitled Flesh and is a dystopian post-apocalyptic zombie erotic romance. And I hasten to add there that's not erotic romance with the zombies. But I wanted to ask you, what is it about a post-apocalyptic setting that works with erotic romance?
Well, I'm a massive fan of Stephen King's The Stand. There's a couple of books that every year or two I'll reread, and that's definitely one of them for me. I love the idea of that empty world, of everything just lying around waiting to be picked up, and just the thought of what a world would be like if 99% of the population was suddenly gone.
Okay, so I'm thinking perhaps, you know, with sort of your usual society has fallen away, do you think that adds any pressure to, or relieves pressure on characters to, you know, to basically go with exactly what their I suppose, primal instincts might be in that situation?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because if law and order were stripped away, then people just would be left to their own devices, exactly which way their moral compass would point. So bad people could get awfully bad with no one to keep them in check. And as a writer, a nice juicy evil character, even besides the zombies shambling around outside. I think the other thing that makes it really interesting is, with no law and order, it's down to the everyday person to step up and stop the bad things from happening if they can. So I love that whole idea of putting this amazing challenge in front of someone, of making them rise to the occasion. I guess a classic example would be Sarah Connor from the Terminator films. She starts out a very soft, fluffy, pretty young woman and becomes this amazing warrior who's crazy kick butt by movie 2. So I guess that sort of character growth really appeals to me.
Your books are set in Australia and Queensland specifically. I was just wondering if you had any comment from your international readers on the choice of setting.
It's been really positive so far, actually, which is it's fantastic because one thing they often tell you is America is really the main market for my books, and people will often say you'll have to change the setting of your book to America so that the readers over there feel more comfortable. But actually, people have been really positive with them being set in Australia. There's been a few people that got a bit confused by the seasons, but it's all good. People have been really supportive. And I think it's great to have some more Australian set books.
On a similar note there, were you required to alter the dialogue at any stage for your characters for that very same reason?
Yes. There are some words, for example, torch to flashlight, and a few things like that, where the Americans just weren't familiar with our term for it. So we were careful with things like that. We certainly didn't want anyone misunderstanding what was going on. So first up, there was a American editor who gave us a list of words just to watch out for. No, it's been fantastic.
Okay.
Here's some more Australian set books in the future.
Yeah, no, it tends to annoy me a bit when I hear, obviously, and it is mainly the American market forcing authors to alter what could be the very thing that makes the book a little bit unique, the fact that it's setting and language, where the rest of the world has to put up with Americanisms, for want of a better word. It seems to me to devalue the whole concept of having this diverse views on the world.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's not like anyone took Mad Max and said, actually, let's make this in Texas. I think the fact that it was filmed in Australia, it really makes for a huge amount of the atmosphere. And I don't think people are as scared of having things set in Australia as some would believe. I think we've got this gorgeous country with these amazing desert roads and bushlands. Why not make the most of them?
Yeah, and I sort of think that can't publishers have a little bit more faith in the readership that they can take a little one or two words, like say you said torch there, maybe stretch themselves a little and figure out, oh, so that's what they call it in Australia or in England or where have you. So I always find that a little bit disappointing. But I'll go on from there now.
Yeah, I think the lines will slowly blur. The one thing not to bring up though is the ass thing. People on Twitter get really tetchy about it. It's really quite funny. All the Australians go, "It's a donkey," and the Americans going, "What are you talking about?" It's definitely one of those words just to stay away from.
Okay. I don't know why, but I found Flesh to be quite a surprise on the action adventure front. There's certainly some pulse-raising action that has nothing to do with the sex. I found it to be a well-balanced story, and I was wondering, did you have other similar responses? I suppose from non-romance sort of reviewers, were they surprised by the fairly substantial action adventure story?
I have had quite a few readers talk about their surprise in liking the series in general, not only that it's a zombie apocalypse paired with a romance, but especially with Flesh. Just it's a bit of a road movie of a book, really. They just the ball starts rolling and it doesn't stop. And people have really reacted well to that. It really seems to give them a journey that's full of thrills. So.
Yeah, no, I was wondering if it might have just means that my reading prejudice. I thought, okay, I'm reading erotic fiction, it's going to be all about the sex. But yeah, no, I was pleasantly surprised, as I said in my review of the book. It's and I'm quite excited. Possibly the wrong word to choose there. In, quite encouraged to read the next book because I. The sequel, if you're writing that to Flesh, because I thought you know, I enjoyed the characters. I enjoyed the pressure you put them under. I won't mention the situation because it's a major plot point, but I, you know, I'm reading this erotic fiction and I get there and to this point in the book and my heart's really going because I think, you know, oh, this person's really in danger. And, you know, not many, what sort of books I'm, not many standard action books achieve that, I suppose, is what I'm getting at there. Yeah, I was going to say, I'll go on to talking about Skin, which is your latest book that's just come out, which I've got for review. It's set in the same world, but a different set of characters. I was just wondering, what caused you at this point to diverge and follow another set of characters?
I didn't want to have each book solely about the one set of characters. I wanted to try to bring in new situations, relationship-wise. As I guess, as to appease that romance writer side of me, I like pulling apart relationships on the page and seeing what makes them tick. And it's that whole thrill of watching people fall in love, and the different kinds of sex. They're all just different action scenes. So it's the same world. The characters from Flesh do make an appearance, but I wanted to extend it out a bit further and look at different situations was really what I was after with Skin. And the same will be with Bone. There'll be characters that you've seen before, but it's now looking at their situation uniquely.
I suppose in that sense too, you get to have a little bit of a broader look at the world, you know, what's going on in post-apocalyptic Queensland. I wanted to talk a bit here about The Walking Dead. I'm a bit of a fan of the TV show, having mainlined it over Christmas and gotten up to the end of season two. And what I noticed in The Walking Dead, and it may turn up in another season, but there was a notable absence of genderqueer or homosexual characters or relationships in any of the storylines there. And in reference to your books, your characters' relationships would be seen, I suppose, as adventurous by some, but they're still straight, for want of a better word. So this is going to be, you know, probably two or three questions at the end here, so feel free to ask me what the questions are again. But I wanted to first, to get your opinion, do you think there's space for non-gender binary characters after the apocalypse?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There'll be a bit more of that in book three, actually.
That was the question I was going to ask, yeah.
That will make an appearance in book three. So it should be interesting. I haven't gone near any male-male before, but I'm really looking forward to doing that. I think the dynamic between a couple and also bringing in a bisexual character will be very interesting, not to give too much away.
Okay. Yes, keep it under wraps.
Yeah, The Walking Dead, I love it solely because it's wonderful to see a lot of money being thrown at something that's that off the wall. Same with Game of Thrones. We're seeing fantasy and horror elements really being given the big treatment, and it's just so great to see that. Just big directors and actors and the sets and everything. I love it.
No, so do you think I'm not a big reader of erotic romance?
No. You know, why, Sean? Why?
Because I've got too much spec to read. I'm going to collapse under a pile of books here. That's not to say I haven't read enough to get a sense of it, but that was just a question in relation to, I suppose. What I'm getting at is the categories within erotic fiction are fairly separate. You know, you've got this sort of erotic fiction here, and so it might be male-male, and then you might have female-female, and then you've got straight, then you might have S&M. So it's all fairly broken up. But I'm talking specifically about short erotic fiction.
Okay.
But when you get to the chance to have a novel, you can blend some of those elements in, I suppose. And what I hadn't seen recently is is that move into, well, you introduce a bisexual character. What sort of extra tension does that put on the other straight characters who are in this apocalyptic world where, you know, you're going to have your normal biological entanglements to keep the race going, so to speak. So what does that, adding in a character who's, you know, basically not part of that, what would be seen as normal, what does that do to the situation?
Ooh, that's an interesting one. I think people are going to love the way they feel driven to. The ability of someone to reproduce or not doesn't really come into it. I don't think the rules are going to change to that degree.
I was just thinking about in your book Flesh, there's a very religious sort of character, and they have certain views towards what's going on in book one. And I thought that was interesting bringing that in, and I haven't seen in The Walking Dead or any other post-apocalyptic fiction with lots of sex in it, that, you know, that sort of view applied to, you know, say two gay characters. And you know, it strikes me as something that could really provide a major conflict point in the book, a major tension.
It can certainly introduce some big-time tension. Prejudice, really, of any kind of drives me nuts. I don't really understand it. I've never understood why it's someone else's business what grown adults do within the bounds of the law and all that. And I guess it's the same with BDSM. You get that coming out to people who choose a different lifestyle, whether in real life or in the books. I guess getting back to the idea of the bisexual, how that would create tension in the immediate area, if someone was involved, say, in a menage situation with a man and a woman and another man or another woman, I guess you would have to be making sure that no one felt like they were the third wheel there to appease one of the other people. The relationship has to be kept pretty equally balanced and make sense to everyone that's in it. Whether it necessarily makes sense to anyone who's not in it, well, they need to get a life. But on the page, yes, that could really make for some dynamite tension. Does that kind of answer the question?
Yeah, no, I think my point there around talking about The Walking Dead and, you know, this I should stop trying to say post-apocalyptic because it keeps tripping me up. But it was just something that struck me, and I thought, you know, we have gay and genderqueer people in society, and looking at The Walking Dead, it's as if they might have all turned into zombies. You know, at least one of those survivors has to statistically be somebody that's, you know, has a different sort of sexual view.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's not like the plague is only going to attack one area of society. There's going to be, you have to imagine, age not coming into it, there's going to be a pretty decent range of people left over rocking about. So it would be nice. It would be really nice if they would broaden the view a bit. I think today, most of today's viewers are pretty open-minded. I like to think most of today's viewers are pretty open-minded. Male-male books are actually one of the biggest sellers in erotic romance today. So it's not like there isn't a market for that sort of romance. People are really interested in the dynamics of that kind of relationship, obviously, because they're selling like hotcakes.
Okay, I better run down and start writing a male-male story.
It's true, Sean.
which sort of leads me into my last question here. Some very cynical types, and I might put in parentheses there, people who don't actually know anything about writing, might say that erotic romance authors are just jumping on the 50 Shades bandwagon. What do you say to them?
Because romance books didn't exist before 50 Shades of Grey. It's amazing how the whole industry sprung up overnight, isn't it? Erotic romance especially. It's amazing. So, sorry, I'll let you finish the question.
That's all right. I'm thinking, you know, Anais Nin obviously wasn't around in the last century. Very, very interesting writing. She did, that would be considered perhaps even pushing the envelope nowadays. I was going to say, that being said, you know, obviously there were erotic fiction writers around before E.L. James.
Mm-hmm.
What effect do you think that phenomena has had on both the genre that you write in and your writing specifically?
Oh, I don't know that it's had a huge effect on my writing. It's had a big effect on the genre, I think, which we're going to keep seeing for quite some time. It's brought more people into reading. It's almost like it's the Harry Potter of smut. It's brought books into new hands. People that normally mightn't have tried it have really gotten enthused. It's obviously connected with readers on some level, and that's a wonderful thing. Anything that gets people reading is, you know, my hat is off. That's fantastic. As for my writing, no, I don't think it's affected my writing. You just evolve as a writer as you do. Your taste will be affected a bit by what you read, what interests you at that point in time, the all sorts of little everyday things that you pick up and blend into your writing. I don't think it's really affected. I haven't rushed out to try to write BDSM. I don't think I could write BDSM. I don't completely understand the frame of mind that drives people to submit or to dominate. I'm not really wired that way. I just like the more, what am I saying? Erotic romance in general. I mean, everyone with sex is into what they're into. I'm not going to start talking about the amazing things that they do in BDSM books, because that isn't what appeals to me as a writer to explore.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, there are some amazing BDSM writers out there. Charisse Sinclair, in particular, is just fantastic. She spins a great story and she gets it. She's in the head of her character and she knows exactly what's making them tick. And I don't feel I could do it to that level, so I don't think I'll be writing BDSM anytime soon. But very interesting. Very interesting stuff.
Okay, well, that was a bit of a different answer to what I was aiming for.
Oh, sorry.
No.
No.
I was possibly not, I had an idea in my head when I wrote the words down. What I was thinking more along the lines of, and I'll be a bit more explicit in my question here,
yeah,
was, let's say you brought out a book with momentum last year.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think if it hadn't have been for 50 Shades, that you would have been picked up by Momentum? So, because they're effectively a traditional publisher, a digital offshoot of Pan Macmillan. And I just wondered, has that major success made the traditional publishing houses go, well, we can publish?
It's definitely made them sit up and take notice. There's no doubt about that. There's absolutely no doubt about that. They're suddenly noticing exactly how much erotic romance is selling. And it's wildfire, it really is. If you look on the Amazon top 100, the bulk of it is romance. And romance readers, they will just chew through the books. They love this stuff. They're wonderful. And something like the phenomenal success of 50 Shades of Grey was is going to make the whole world sit up and take notice. I mean, you can't sell that many books, because as much as everyone in publishing is a book lover, it's still a business. Mm. This is obviously where the money's at, and they're going to follow that. So Anne Treasure actually wrote a blog post about the day I sent in Flesh, and how Joel, the publisher at Momentum, had said, I want to put out some erotic romance. And I think that was happening everywhere. I think everyone was going, let's start exploring this field. Let's get more into this. Is that more
from
the business side of things?
No, that's two answers to one question, and both of them very good. No, it's something that intrigues me. It's
fascinating, yeah, isn't it, when it's almost like a tidal wave like that really hits an industry, and it's very much the next big thing. It's amazing to see all the little after effects ripple through.
I suppose it just seems interesting to me that romance has been huge as sort of like bubbling below the surface, but you know, romance has always been, from what I can tell, an extremely large market. And then all of a sudden the traditional publishers, who from what I can tell are, you know, sort of scratching their heads going, how can we make more money because we're not making enough, have only just now gone, oh, there's erotic romance, or there's romance.
People have funny attitudes when it comes to romance. I don't want to get into literary versus genre. I think there's room enough for everyone. People are going to buy what appeals to them. There's no point in judging who has the more grand expectations laid on them, or quite whatever. There's a lot of amazing romance writers out there. The thing I love with romance, erotic romance in particular, is the ability to move through different genres. I can set a love story anywhere, just about. I've done the post-zombie apocalypse. I'm going to do more of that because it's a fascinating world. But I've also finished a science fiction one. I'd like to do a fantasy, but I'm working on a contemporary right at the moment. I can explore all the different worlds that I love. And so romance is this big, beautiful, amazing genre with something in it for everyone. I guess the one common denominator really is that want of a happy ever after. A lot of people seem to think that's, I've heard it termed emotional cowardice. But
I don't know if I agree with that.
I don't, but...
Yeah.
I have heard it called that at its most extreme. I won't name names or thank anyone. But I like knowing things are going to resolve in a positive fashion. I feel good about going on this adventure, knowing things are going to work out for these two people and there's hope in the end. That really speaks to me. But I think the world can be a pretty place.
I was going to say.
I could pull out the thesaurus, but I'm going to leave it at And romance is wonderful for giving hope. It explores all sorts of difficult situations, but you know things are going to work out in the end.
Yeah. I was just thinking then about, I've read about 5 books through Game of Thrones, the Song of Ice and Fire series, and I should be sort of inured to it now, but every time I think, oh no, he can't possibly have killed that character.
He has, isn't it?
And that he may not be showing emotional cowardice there in killing off his characters, but I tell you what, as a reader, I find that demoralizing when you have these central characters who are major characters who are killed off. It may be sort of historically correct, or you know, realistic in inverted commas, but as a story for me, maybe doing that once or twice is okay, but when it happens all the time, I just find it's maybe I'm secretly a romance reader at heart. I don't know.
I know you are. I was going to break that to you eventually, but it's good that you've come to the realization yourself, Sean. I think that's wonderful. I think if I go on a journey with a character and they're doing all these amazing things and learning more about themselves and how cool they can be or quite whatever, their bravery and their courage is shining through, I don't want their head to get lopped off at the end. I kind of turn around and go, well, what was the point of that? I know there are all sorts of arguments that can be made, but for me, that's not what I'm after. I know you have to kill your darlings, and I have killed the odd innocent. I'm all fine for roughing people up and some innocent bunnies getting caught in the crossfire, but no, not full on all the time, please. I want give me my hope. he's amazing, though, that world that he's built in Game of Thrones. It's just awe-inspiring, isn't it?
Yeah, it's vast, and that's probably what keeps me coming back to it, is that I've got a history of all these families and places, and I guess I want to find out the end of the story, and probably still secretly hoping that one will live, and perhaps one of the Stark children will, I don't know, have a happy ever after. I better not spoil it for people who haven't read everything.
No, we better not go there.
I was going to say that's the end of my questions, and I just wanted to say it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you, Kylie, and thank you for the opportunity.
You're very welcome. This has been great. Thanks a lot, Sean.
And that brings us, dear listeners, to the end of the podcast. Thank you for listening. You may leave audio feedback at www.speakpipe.com/bookanaut. Check the show notes for a link. Or you may leave written feedback on Facebook, the Podomatic page, or at my blog. Thank you.